Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, June 4th. We begin with an article that carries the headline, Attorney General files complaint on power rate hike. And this is an article written by Tony Reed, who's a staff writer for the Decatur Herald and Review. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan is trying to short-circuit an electricity price hike that will add $131 a year to the power bills of central Illinois families. Madigan has filed a legal complaint with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission challenging the results of a recent power supply auction that saw electricity costs measured in megawatt days jump from $16.75 a megawatt day to $150 per megawatt day, a leap of close to 900%. The Attorney General wants the Commission to intervene and suspend the power rates decided in the regional auction held in April. Madigan asks that extra money consumers have already paid since the rates kicked in June 1st be refunded, and calls on the Commission to set new rates before changing the rules so a power auction can't come back with a similar outcome in the future. Madigan goes on to allege the stunning climb in power rates was prompted by one power company, Dynegy, being able to wield too much influence by controlling half the available power supply for a large chunk of Illinois. Madigan said the commission should investigate and punish with civil penalties if it finds the power auction involved, quote, market manipulation, end quote. And she said it should impose new conditions on Dynegy with regard to its bidding behavior. Houston-based Dynegy, in a statement Wednesday, said it had done nothing wrong. Dynegy follows and respects all the rules, tariffs, and obligations in the markets and areas where we operate, said David Onifer, the company's external communications and media relations manager. He said Dynegy had offered all its available power and had complied with all tariff rules and procedures. Madigan said if the commission also declines to find the auction rates are unjust and unreasonable, it should send the matter to a settlement judge for a settlement process. And if that doesn't work out, set the matter for discovery and an evidentiary hearing. The Attorney General said the need for action is urgent because families and businesses have been left facing an unprecedented increase in their bills, calculated at some $100 million. Additionally, the increased cost to many commercial and industrial electricity users, equaling millions of dollars, will constitute an unreasonable burden on the businesses and their employees located in the state of Illinois, Madigan said. Thus, the people request the commission act on this complaint as quickly as possible. The power auction that sparked the controversy was handled by an organization called the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator. This nonprofit entity oversees the smooth distribution of power across 15 states and takes in the territory covered by the delivery utility Ameren, Illinois. The auction is designed to ensure adequate power is available in high summer and other peak times and locks in supplies from electric generation companies while setting the peak price for a year. A Mid-Continent spokesman said at the time the auction process had been fair and was overseen by an independent market monitor. The price spike was widely condemned, however, with voices ranging from state lawmakers to the Citizens Utility Board public watchdog group calling for a review of the results. It's not right that many Ameren customers could struggle to pay their bills this summer while big power generators make a windfall off these skyrocketing prices, CUB Executive Director David Collada said. In the meantime, CUB is urging consumers to mitigate the price hike by cutting their power consumption. It noted that raising thermostats on air conditioning by just 2 degrees can cut cooling bills by 14%. More saving tips are located at www.citizensutilityboard.org. Huey Freeman reports that Decatur Police Department will be rolling out new patrol SUVs. 1 year after the police moved into their new building, they are cruising on the city streets in a brand new fleet of all-wheel drive sports utility vehicles. The whole trend in law enforcement nationwide is to go to SUVs, Decatur Police Chief Brad Sweeney said. New vehicles are badly needed because the force has been making do with worn-out patrol cars in recent years due to budget constraints, Sweeney said. 10 of the vehicles have arrived in Decatur. Each costs $26,000, purchased from Jackson Ford Incorporated. 5 of the Ford Interceptors are in service after they were outfitted with emergency light bars, computers, and prisoner cages. 5 more vehicles are on the way to Decatur from the manufacturer. Sweeney plans to ask the City Council for 10 more at a June meeting to bring the total of new vehicles to 25. It's a new administration, said Sweeney, who took over the reins in January and made many changes, including promotions for a mostly new command staff and a change from a 6-day to a 5-day work week. So we got new graphics for the vehicles. The new graphics, with bigger, bolder, artistically graduated letters, were created locally at Dynagraphics Fast Impressions. It's a much more modern look, Sweeney said. Rather than stick with the smaller, traditional vehicles, which were adequate for the amount of gear used by officers in the past, the department asked the city to supply vehicles better suited for 21st century police work. Police officers carry an arsenal in their vehicles, Sweeney said. Equipment carried by officers, many of whom spend most of their shifts in their vehicles, include computers, dash cameras, radar guns, portable camcorders, cameras, preliminary breath testing machines, rifle packs, printers, riot helmets, shields, first aid kits, infrared equipment, and stop sticks. Of course, there's a teddy bear in each trunk, Sweeney said. Children who are upset at accident or crime scenes receive the gifts to comfort them and build rapport with the officers. In addition, officers carry a pursuit box, the traditional name of the case loaded with forms and documents such as traffic and warning tickets. Those cases normally fill up passenger seats. With trainees or auxiliary officers sometimes taking those seats, the boxes have been relegated to the trunk, already crammed with supplies in the smaller vehicles. The rear seats are normally reserved for prisoners. Years ago, they walked out to the car with just the duty belt, and that was just it, said Sweeney, who keeps a photograph of the white and blue Chevy Capri squad car he drove in the 1990s on an office shelf. Now we just keep adding more technology, equipment, and tools. The new Interceptors are also advantageous because of their all-wheel drive feature. Before the delivery of the new vehicles, only 2 of the department's 80 vehicles were all-wheel drive, both for canine units. With police vehicles often involved in pursuits, including during challenging weather and road conditions, increased traction will be a tremendous asset. During the 2 winters we had prior to this last one, we had trouble getting to some rural locations, Sweeney said. The all-wheel drive will be huge for us. Before long, local officers will also be adding body cameras to their toolboxes. Sweeney said the department is performing research to obtain the best available cameras. There is no target date for when the cameras will be obtained. Picking out the ones we want, Sweeney said, it will probably be one of the biggest expenses we've ever had. Many of the cars that are being replaced were in desperate need of disparate repairs so that the repair costs exceeded their value. City Councilman Jerry Dawson said the police department has been patient in waiting for new vehicles. They did not receive any new vehicles last year. We asked them to hold off on any new purchases, said Dawson, for former Macon County Sheriff, who spent 31 years in law enforcement. The police have been stretching them further than we asked them to. It just got to the breaking point that we had to give the guys and gals new cars. They should have had these last year. Dawson said the city has purchased basic vehicles, not a fleet of Cadillacs. They landed a good deal by using the state bid process. Sweeney said there is one bid for an out-of-state agency that was lower than the one accepted, but there would have been added transportation costs. Dawson said the city council prefers to buy locally because the money spent circulates in the local economy. Many people don't understand the difference between the use of police vehicles and ordinary vehicles, Dawson said. Most non-commercial vehicles are driven part-time, then sit. Police vehicles are driven 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Sometimes prisoners are transported in them. You're in chases, and a lot of time you have to get there in a hurry, Dawson said, adding the vehicles could be driven at speeds of up to 90 miles per hour. You need a dependable vehicle for the safety of the officers and the public. Police cars are driven aggressively, often in life or death situations, Sweeney added. If an officer is in the West End and an emergency arises on the East Side, the ride will involve rapid accelerations with intermittent sudden braking. You get around as quickly and as safely as you can, Sweeney said, adding that tires, brake pads, and transmissions are worn out in relatively short order. Sweeney said officers appreciate the city council finding and improving the funding for the new fleet. He also appreciates the department's mechanics, Tom Cook and Tim Wilderman, who have been pulling emergency light bars, computers, and control mechanisms from the old vehicles and installing them on the new ones. They have also been applying the new graphics. They will be putting 25 new cars together for the police department, Sweeney said, adding it takes about 3 days to transition each new vehicle. They also have to keep the other cars running while they're falling apart all around us. They still have to fix flats and replace belts that are broken. The new shiny vehicles are making an impression on Decatur's finest. It's a real morale booster to get the new cars in the fleet, Sweeney said. Kurt Erickson, the Springfield Bureau Chief for the Decatur Herald and Review, writes that casinos eyed for Decatur and Carterville in latest gambling plan. And this is from Springfield. A Southern Illinois winery and an undisclosed location in Decatur have become part of the annual gambling expansion conversation in the capital city. But the odds that either place becomes a gambling haven is no sure bet. As part of a long-running push by officials in Chicago to open a casino, state lawmakers are working to craft a package that will draw votes from their colleagues throughout the state. Until last month, the general outlines of a plan included the new Chicago casino, as well as smaller casinos in southern Cook County, Rockford, Danville, and Lake County. But as the spring legislative session wound down last week, a new plan emerged that would bring smaller satellite casinos to central and southern Illinois. Each of those would have between 400 and 600 gaming positions. State Senator Terry Link, a Democrat of Waukegan, one of the architects of gambling expansion, said he's hopeful lawmakers can approve legislation this summer in order to help begin generating as much as $500 million to the state. This is a bill that's in motion. It's obviously in play, Link said. With all the other things going on, this is something that will be looked at over the summer and hopefully brought up someday when we're back in Springfield. The site being looked at in southern Illinois is the Walker's Bluff Entertainment Development in Carterville. It features a restaurant, winery, gift store, and music venue. The first sign that Walker's Bluff wanted to be a player in the casino talks came earlier this year when the company hired former state representative Dan Reitz, a Democrat of Steelville, in early April to serve as its lobbyist in the Capitol. With Walker's Bluff in play as a possible site for one of the satellites, officials began searching for a central Illinois location. Springfield was discussed as a potential site, but it was ruled out because the capital city has become a hotbed of video gambling facilities. That's when Decatur was brought into the mix. Unlike having a specific location like Walker's Bluff, no one has publicly identified a site in Decatur for a possible casino. Various possibilities have been raised, including a Lake Decatur location to help boost development on the waterfront, or at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel on the city's west edge. But Decatur Mayor Mike McElroy said the city isn't actively pursuing a casino. He said he only learned of the idea last week during a short telephone conversation. This call just comes to me out of the blue, McElroy said. We don't say no to anything, but I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell. State Representative Bill Mitchell, a Republican from Forsyth, said he hasn't been approached about a Decatur casino, and he's not sure there is support for one in the community. I do not think gaming in Decatur would lead to an economic renaissance, Mitchell said. Mitchell said the advent of video gambling could result in little net gain in local revenue. There are only so many disposable dollars. When do you reach a saturation point? Mitchell said. But in southern Illinois, State Representative John Bradley, a Democrat of Marion, signaled he's supportive of the Walker's Bluff location, even though he has developed a staunch anti-gambling record during his 12 years in the House. He said the owners of Walker's Bluff, Cindy and David Bunch, have made a strong financial commitment to the region. They've made quite an investment in our area, said Bradley. State Representative Terry Bryant, a Republican from Murfreesboro, said she's doubtful the package will move forward this summer. Although she supports Walker's Bluff, she said she's not sure she would support a casino at the location. Link said he's hopeful negotiations will wrap up soon. Hopefully it will be done in order to have a vote on it soon, Link said. Allison Petty, an H&R staff writer, says the Park District sets table for summer programs. The annual program that provides free lunches to kids in Decatur Parks will begin next week. The Decatur Park District's park leaders, known as Yellow Hats for their distinctive headgear, will rotate between 12 neighborhood parks distributing the food, which is funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and administered by the Illinois State Board of Education. The program runs weekdays from June 9th to August 5th. Lunches are distributed to children younger than 18 who come to the parks at the designated times, regardless of their income level. Park leaders also will supervise activities in Jasper, Lyons, Monroe, and Mueller parks from 5:30 to 8 p.m. on weekdays. But the Park District is going a step further this year, launching a pilot program that is a partnership with the Macon County Sheriff's Office and Caring Black Men, said Jamie Gower, the district's Director of Recreation and Facilities. More information about the program, based in Mueller Park, will be available at a free kickoff party on Tuesday, June 9th. Hot dogs, chips, and drinks will be served at 5:30 p.m. at the park's Horace G. Livingston Jr. Pavilion, and plans for the summer activities will be shared at 6 p.m. The program will include free sports clinics to teach golf, baseball, basketball, and soccer in the afternoons. The district will also hold two movie nights in Mueller Park, showing the films on large inflatable screens. Sheriff's deputies plan to drop in and build relationships with the kids, Gower said. In 2012, the district reduced the number of hours that park leaders visited the neighborhood parks, citing low attendance. If the pilot program goes well, Gower said there's a possibility of expanding it to other locations in the future. We want to try something different than we have because we're not getting kids there. I'm not saying this is the ultimate answer, but we have to try something, he said. Emily Steele writes that the popularity and variety of farmers markets continues to grow. Decatur is surrounded by lush farmland, producing food most often destined for other locations. But with the arrival of summer farmers markets and roadside stands, some of that produce is being redirected straight to consumers who like the fresh food and connecting with local farmers. Illinois ranks third in the United States for the number of farmers markets, according to the Illinois Department of Agriculture. And they're growing both in numbers and what they sell. In 2012, the state expanded what could be sold at farmers markets with a cottage food law that allows farmers and other entrepreneurs to make certain foods in home kitchens. Now, new legislation is awaiting a signature from Governor Bruce Rauner to allow for more food products beyond baked goods, jams, and dried herbs. One of the oldest ongoing markets in the area is the one in Central Park. That market goes back to during the Civil War, said Pete Versalino. Versalino manages the privately owned downtown market, which he started selling produce in the 1980s. Before that, he remembers helping his father set up for what was then a twice-weekly market. Now it's down to every Saturday starting this weekend. We're not big, but there's not much we don't have, Versalino said. Vendors vary every week, but the inaugural weekend will host about 8 farmers selling tomatoes, zucchini, cucumbers, green onions, strawberries, lettuce, and other produce started in greenhouses to get a head start on the growing season. The Mount Zion Heroic Age Art Center's first farmers market starts today. Hopefully, we're going to have a really good turnout, said founder Sue Rosati. Besides fruits, vegetables, honey, and flowers, the Thursday markets will also showcase craft vendors and musicians. She hopes the weeknight event will pull in people going to chill on the hill and give vendors more opportunities to sell fast-growing crops. I think Mount Zion is going to like that it's theirs, Rosati said. And that may be Rosati. Urban farmer Cheyenne Marston will split her time between the Richland and Mount Zion markets this summer. Marston is an agriculture student at Richland. The full-time occupational therapist has been selling herbs and vegetables at Richland for 3 years and is looking forward to sharing recipes and talking about unfamiliar produce with a new audience at the Arts Center. The Denver native says she's developed a niche audience in the Hispanic community by selling tomatillos, jalapenos, and cilantro. Last year, she grew 1,700 pounds of produce on less than 1 acre of land. She's also started a small CSA, community share agriculture this year, in which people pay to get a share of fresh produce every week. I would really love to quit my job to farm, Marston said. And the markets may help her grow enough customers to do that. Well, she hopes to become a full-time farmer someday. Marston's outgoing personality means she'll always want to talk to people about food. I need that interaction at the farmers markets, Marston said. The majority of people want to feel a connection with you. Versalino said his market is certified through the Department of Agriculture, so they focus more on fresh produce than craft products. We treat this more like truly a farmer's market, he said. Farmers' markets have changed throughout the years. Versalino has seen more regulations put in place as the markets grow, but there are fewer farmers to go around. He said with fewer home gardens, shoppers are curious about locally produced food. People ask questions today, and it's not the same questions they asked at the box stores, Versalino said. From the Lee News Service Bureau, Kevin Barlow writes about work already ongoing at the Logan County Marijuana Facility. The official groundbreaking is Saturday, but crews already are working at the site of an $8 million medical marijuana cultivation center, expected to create 150 construction jobs and 40 permanent positions in the Logan County area. The Logan County Board really took the lead in recruiting this facility and bringing it here, said Logan County Economic Development Partnership Executive Director Bill Thomas. We saw it as an opportunity to expand our agriculture base, which is a leading industry in Logan County and very important to us. The 40,000 square foot facility will be at the intersection of Old Route 66 and 1800th Street north of Lincoln. Members of the Logan County Board will be at the 9:30 a.m. groundbreaking to welcome representatives from the Chicago-based Cresco Labs, which has state cultivation center permits in Lincoln, Chicago, and Kankakee. The Illinois Department of Agriculture oversees the cultivation centers under a pilot program signed into law by then-Governor Pat Quinn in August 2013. State law limits the number of cultivation centers to one in each of the 22 state police districts and a total of 60 dispensaries throughout the state. The Logan County facility is the one assigned to Springfield-based Illinois State Police District 9. We are committed to the success of this program and are prepared to hit the ground running to provide safe, effective treatment to patients in need, said Dominic Sergi, Executive Vice President of Cresco Labs. Sergi said the facility will be built from the ground up, incorporating the latest in construction design and technology. Following the groundbreaking, the Logan County Economic Development Partnership will host a public informational meeting about the facility at 10:30 a.m. at the Davidson Scheffer Gymnasium at Lincoln College. And I'm afraid that's all. We have a little more to that article, but we are out of time for the first half hour of news from the Decatur area, and primarily it's all come from the Decatur Herald and Review. We're going to take a quick break. I'll be right back with a second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, June 4th.